dear staff, I think we need to begin to save time. Those who are going to the airport must be in a position to do that. We're supposed to have started already. We are honored by the arrival of our deputy minister, and I think it suffices for us to start. Let me welcome our deputy minister and the delegation from the department. Let me welcome honorable members of the committee and really thank you for coming. I know it's a party day, but that sacrifice really needs to be commended. And welcome the committee whip and other members who are here. Our approach would be to request that the department would present. Remember, we are still going to be with them next week on the actual vote, budget vote debate. We are then going to request the department to at least focus on those things that are of serious strategic priority for the department and the challenges, budget allocations, and the mechanisms are put in place to address such. And if this be with measurable targets so that we are able to be informed as the committee to come and do oversight next time. But next week we'll be engaging, and I would suggest that once they emphasize those points that I've raised, we will remain as we go, as we attack, we'll be reading the document thoroughly for next week. I hope I'm covering the feelings of all of us. Can I then hand over to the ministry to engage with the business?
Honorable Chairperson, thank you very much. And members of the committee, it's indeed a privilege and a pleasure to be here with you this morning. But I do so with a heavy heart, and I'm sure all of you will share in the sadness that we should have had a better victory. We should have had a better result in the match last night. I was hearing the member here say that our fellows did an excellent job on the field, but unfortunately the last 2 minutes let them down when they sort of lost out on that goal. But I think that having lost in such a brilliant way makes us all very proud of Bafana Bafana, and it certainly enables all of us to look forward to 2010 with a great amount of enthusiasm. But that's a sense of sadness, but let me also just take this opportunity to apologize for the minister, who was not able to be with us. We've made a principal commitment in the ministry, the top leadership of the department, both the minister, deputy minister, and the DG, and the senior staff, that we will always venture to make ourselves available to both committees, the Portfolio Committee of the National Assembly, as well as the Select Committee of this House. Whenever it is possible, we will endeavor to make ourselves available and to be at your service. This morning our task is to give you a brief introduction to the medium-term program of the department as we prepare ourselves to take the budget vote of the department. The Director General, Professor Levine, who is seated here on my right, will take us through the critical elements of a presentation that will help you to understand better the programmatic thrust of the department in this mandate term of government, its strategic priorities, and the particular way in which we plan to execute the responsibilities that have been called on us as the Department of Public Service and Administration. But I thought I'd just briefly outline the context in which we should look at this budget program and the votes. And for most of you, you will realize that the backdrop to this, in fact, the backdrop to the entire program of government, was very well captured in both the inaugural address of the President, President Zuma, as well as the State of the Nation address. And the basis for the content of both those addresses to the nation really arise from the manifesto of the ruling party, the African National Congress, and the overwhelming mandate it got from the electorate in this country. But it's common knowledge now that government has identified a number of key priorities which focuses as the kind of strategic thrusts of the program of government. And the five priorities are so well known that I shall not venture to mention them again to you. But it is in that context that we in government outlined 10 strategic thrusts to give effect to the five priorities of government. And in one of the 10 strategic thrusts, the mission and mandate of the Department of Public Service and Administration gets far more clearly scoped and defined. And at its heart, it centers on the need for this department to guarantee the delivery of an effective development democratic state that must function in an effective way to guarantee the delivery of basic public services to the people of this country. And that's the core and the heart of our mission. And in order to do that, we have been called upon to try and do four principal strategic things. The one is to make sure that this machinery that we are building as a democratic state is effective. Effective in that it is capable of delivering the services that our people want, and that it brings itself as a machinery closer to the people. The second is that we have to focus on really improving the standard and level of public service delivery in the public service. That is to, in nitty-gritty terms, to cut down the long queues, to fasten the way things are being addressed by public servants in the various departments, and to guarantee the people the rights which the Constitution enshrines upon them, and that is the rights to proper service delivery of basic services. The third thrust is to be able to ensure that we do this and at the same time institutionalize a culture of service in the public service, a culture of honesty, transparency, integrity, and hard work must come to characterize the nature of the public service that we are building for this developmental state. And of course, the fourth one comes from the need for us to give expression to the principles which are defined in the Constitution. I think it's chapter 10 and 11, which defines the democratic principles and the rights culture on which our state is based. And we have to make sure that the state that we are building is fully expressive of these principles, that it is a participatory state, it enables forms in which the people themselves can participate, and that government is not alienated from the people. I think if you put all these things together and stitch them together, they are no better encapsulated
than for me to repeat what the President Zuma, stated in his budget vote, that the challenge is for us to build an effective, responsive, and caring developmental state. One that is capable of meeting the basic needs of our people, and one that will enable us to give truth to the commitment that so long as there are children who are suffering without a meal and who go to school, who are not able to go to school, so long as there are people who are unemployed and can't get a decent job, and so long as there are communities that remain homeless and devoid of the basic facilities of life, we as a government will not rest. We will have to seize the moment and to build that caring and responsive state. And I'm sure that what we are going to outline today through Professor Levine's presentation will show you precisely how the department plans to execute the mission that has been given to us. Thank you very much, Mr.
Can we give the minister a loud of applause for the presentation? And thank you very much, our deputy minister. I'm not sure whether the DG would want to present so that we'll come and have questions for clarity later on. Yes.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Deputy Minister, Honourable Member, it's a pleasure and privilege for me to get this opportunity from the committee to make this presentation on the eve of our budget vote. as requested by the Chairperson, I will deal with the key priorities. I'll mention some of the challenges. And I won't go into all of the details because that will be done next week. So on some of the slides, I won't go through all of the points. Basically, the presentation begins just to give the committee members a sense of the scope of the ministry, its work, and then we give a bit of background on the establishment of the DPSA, its role within the governance administration cluster, the vision and mission, mandate and role, the overview of the programs, the priorities. We'll talk to some achievements. The chair has asked me to talk to some challenges. I will perhaps highlight one or two key challenges which are of relevance to this committee and where we could support each other going forward, and then deal with the medium-term budget. The ministry does consist of the DPSA as the prime department, but there are a number of other important components of the ministry, including the Public Administration Leadership and Management Academy. It used to be called SAMDI, it's now called PALAMA, which facilitates training for public servants. The Public Service Sector Training Authority provides accreditation of training and quality assurance and establishes learnerships. The Public Service Commission is mentioned in this context, honourable members, because the Commission's budget is appropriated by the Minister for the Public Service and Administration. As we know, the Commission is an independent constitutional body supporting Parliament, but the budget is appropriated by the Minister, so it's part of the budget vote process related to the Minister for Public Service and Administration. We also have the State Information Technology Agency, which is a government agency which delivers IT services, as well as the Center for Public Service Innovation, which is a small government component within the ministry that focuses on innovation in the public service, identifies good practices, good innovations, and helps to mainstream them throughout the public service. the DPSA really was established when the Minister for the Public Service and Administration before that ministry was established in 1994. And prior to that, we had a commission with a different kind of mandate to the commission's mandate under the Constitution. So it was a new setup, and the minister, without any policy support, had to establish an office, and then also had to look at establishing a department. The constitution, still emerging at the time, defined a new monitoring evaluation role for the Public Service Commission. And what happened then is the Public Service Commission, which was a highly centralized body which was regulating public administration across the public service, the commission then was unbundled. And part of it went to the newly established constitutional body, and part of it came into the newly established department to support the minister. But over time, also, the role of the DPSA has expanded beyond simply developing policy to also providing hands-on support to departments in implementing public service and administration policy. Since 1996, there's been also a number of projects, important national projects, that have been assigned to the department. One would be the Community Development Worker Program. Another one would be the African Peer Review Mechanism, which the minister coordinates on behalf of the president. And then support to some of the post-conflict interventions that we've made as a country, particularly in the Democratic Republic of Congo, where we've had a large presence and project since 2004, the end of 2004 up until now. The governance and administration cluster is one of the five national government clusters established by the new government. The Ministers for the Public Service and Administration and the Minister of Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs are the coordinating ministers. There's a number of other ministers, the ministers in the Presidency, Home Affairs, Finance, Justice, and so on, that are also part of that particular cabinet committee. And the committee aims to harmonize the work of the different departments that fall within the GNA cluster and coordinates the implementation of policies. The Cabinet Committee is also mirrored by a cluster of Directors General, and as in the case of the Cabinet Committee, the DGs of Public Service and Administration, that's myself, and Cooperative Governance and Traditional Affairs, are responsible for leading that DG cluster. In terms of the Department of Public Service and Administration's vision and mission, the vision is to be a global leader in public service excellence. And the mission is to support the minister in leading public service transformation, to provide professional advice and support to ensure public service excellence, and then to promote good governance nationally on the African continent as well as globally. We derive our mandate as a department from the Constitution of 1996, the Manifesto of the Ruling Party, the State of the Nation Address, the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, the decisions of the various cabinet makhutla, the government program of action, cabinet decisions, directives of the minister, and then legislative mandates. And we're talking here about the Public Service Act as well as the CETA Act. Section 195 of the Constitution is also fundamental in guiding us. And this is a part of the Constitution in Chapter 10. That deals with the values and principles of public administration, and which also obviously inform the mandate and mission of the Public Service Commission. And these are the values which include high standards of professional ethics, efficiency, effectiveness, development-oriented public service and administration, provision of services in an impartial, fair, equitable way, the need to respond to the needs of the people and to get, as the Deputy Minister has emphasized, in terms of the objectives of the developmental state, to get participation by the public in various programs of government. Accountability and transparency are obviously key values. Sound human resource management And then representativity through the implementation of affirmative action are the fundamental values and principles of the Constitution, which must always guide us, and we need to continue to reflect upon as we go upon about our work. In terms of the manifesto of the ruling party, the deputy minister has referred to the imperatives of the democracy state, the need to ensure more effective government, improve coordination and planning efforts of the developmental state by means of a planning entity. A review of the structure of government will be undertaken to ensure effective service delivery. Now, we are all aware that there have been some changes in the macro structure of government when the president announced his cabinet on May the 10th. And the DPSA is playing a leading role in supporting the minister in the presidency, Minister Chabane, to implement the new macro organization of the state. Another important aspect that we need to focus on emerging out of the manifesto of the ruling party is the focus on the people and the public service workers who must make all of the objectives and aims and programs of the developmental state come to fruition. And that is the need to ensure that we have the right numbers of personnel who are correctly placed in order to deliver government priorities, and also to ensure that the capacity of those public service workers is adequate in order to achieve the objectives set by government. This just does amplify on what I already mentioned about the macro reorganization of government, and as I've indicated, the DPSA is playing the lead role. We're working closely with the National Treasury, the Department of Public Works, and then, of course, the actual departments themselves. Now, in the State of the Nation address, the President referred to a number of strategic objectives of the department, the improvement of public services, the strengthening of democratic institutions, to ensure that the three spheres of government are able to improve service delivery through the establishment of a single system of public services, the need to put people first, budgetarily, and then the need to have an interactive government, a government that is responsive in terms of values and principles and which fosters public participation. He also, the President, made mention and reference to participation in the reconstruction and development on the African continent, intensifying South-South relations, and that there is a need to use public funds very prudently given the current global economic crisis. So what we've done in developing our medium-term strategy is we've incorporated the priorities from the State of the Nation address, and then we aim to respond to the challenges confronting the public service, but within the constraints of the current global economic situation. Now, each cluster of government has a program of action. The governance and administration one flows from the decisions of the Cabinet Makhutla as well as the State of the Nation address. And the program of action is being developed based on the medium-term strategic framework, which was discussed in the May Cabinet Makhutla and which Cabinet is currently finalizing. And then clusters present reports to Cabinet Makhutla in January and July, as well as between those Makhutla. Those reports are put on the government website, and media briefings are held by the minister in order to amplify on progress made in terms of the program of action on a quarterly basis. Now, just in terms of the legislative mandate, in terms of the Public Service Act, we support the minister to transform and modernize the public service, to oversee changes in the structure of the public service, to establish norms and standards for human resource management and development, conditions of service, labor relations, IT and service delivery, to issue directives and regulations for the public service, to formulate the national anti-corruption strategy, and to exercise oversight over the State Information Technology Agency. Our programs are listed in the two slides here. Program 1, Administration, the various sub-programs. Program 2, Human Resource Management and Development, which includes human resource planning, diversity management. Management of compensation includes remuneration, negotiations and labor relations. Information technology and management includes the e-government program. And then service delivery improvement includes Bajupili, the CD, Community Development Worker Program. And then the governance program includes public sector anti-corruption, international African affairs, monitoring evaluation, and the APRM. Moving on to some of these priorities then, just for program, beginning with human resource management and development, as indicated, I won't necessarily read through all of this, but the key ones here would be ensuring representativity through the gender equality strategic framework, as well as the job access strategic framework, which is to ensure that people with disabilities do have access to public service jobs, and also the setting of targets in terms of the proportion of the workforce, which must be women and people with disabilities. We also have a focus here on performance management and development, which is very important to ensure that that is implemented across government. As well as a program which focuses on developing a database of all the skills and competencies of people in the public service, so that we can better understand the capacity of the public service, where we've got major skills gaps, and so on and so forth. Management of compensation really is the program that focuses on the implementation of the remuneration policy framework. That, of course, includes the topical matters such as the occupation-specific dispensations and the big focus on doctors, medical specialists at the moment, as we know. Also, the focus on building social partnerships. And we have a public sector summit which is planned for later this year in September. Looking at the trends in the wage bill, then also focusing on the single public service, the aspects around costing in particular, and then looking ultimately towards implementing a remuneration policy framework for the single public service. The information technology management program is focusing on the e-government program, as I've indicated, where we aim to work with departments of home affairs, social development, and justice in 6 poor services, which we want to bring online: the application for ID, childbirth registration, foster care grant, application for pension, application for child maintenance, and notification of death. We also are involved in the Tutong centers, the multi-purpose community centers, a project largely driven by GCIS and the DPSA in partnership. And we've been focusing on trying to ensure that these multi-purpose community centers do have an IT infrastructure and there is connectivity which enables people who need certain services offered in those centers to access existing online arrangements of government. We also want to look at developing a government-wide information security governance framework. Obviously, the transversal system needs to be secure in order to prevent corruption. The systems of PERSAL, that's the
to have a government-wide information security governance framework. In service of the development improvement, sorry, service delivery improvement, one priority area is to take the program that we implemented at local government level, the budgetary change management engagement program, and apply that in national and provincial departments. We also want to assist departments to establish service delivery models. This has helped over the last 18 months in Home Affairs to speed up the turnaround time in issuing of ID books through the department focusing on developing a service delivery model, cutting out many unnecessary steps in the process, rationalizing the process, and reducing the delivery time from 120 days to about 37 days for the delivery of an ID. And then, obviously, the focus on CEWs I've mentioned in this program. We also are supporting the presidency in its war on poverty campaign, which is being coordinated from the presidency. Then we've also developed Know Your Service Right booklets as part of our as a central department dealing with policy, how do we deal with people and communities on the ground? We developed these booklets, Know Your Service Right, and then we distributed those booklets to ensure that citizens are able to engage with government, hold them to account, understand what their rights are in terms of the basic social development program. And we're also working on the programs now in justice. In the governance program, we are focusing, as I've indicated, on the African peer review mechanism. This is a program which also deals with some of the matters of professional ethics in the public service. So this program also deals with the conflict of interest framework, which we are developing and currently discussing at cabinet level, which includes the financial disclosures of public servants, which are often called into question in terms of everyone declaring conflicts of interest. There was a recent focus on the Audit General's report. I'm sure all the honourable members have seen that particular area of work. We are also, as a country, we have acceded to a number of international anti-corruption conventions, the UN one, the OECD, the African Union, and on behalf of government, we do coordinate with some of the departments that are involved in combating corruption to engage at that level of the international conventions, the various meetings that are held, and so on. Focusing on some of the achievements, we launched the Job Access Strategic Framework. That's the one that focuses on making sure we get people with disabilities opportunities in the public service. Also on the gender front, we have a 34.4% representation of women in the senior management service, but that falls below our target of 50%. So we aren't actually achieving the targets both in the area of gender and people with disabilities, so we will need to tighten up. I think that these are some of the areas that we need to work together with the community on, in terms of holding departments accountable to meeting the actual targets. I think it's very important to recognize that public administration is decentralized to departments. We are responsible for the policy framework of how to recruit and retain, remunerate staff, the IT framework, the service delivery improvement framework. But actual responsibility and accountability rests with ministers and directors general in departments. So I think for us, we would hope that we could support the committee by coming with reports and information and work that we've done, which will help the committee to understand where we have problems across the public service and where interventions are needed, particularly in the case of this committee, in terms of provinces, where are the provinces where there are specific challenges which may need to be addressed. We also, in this area, deal with policies and programs related to health and wellness that would include HIV and AIDS in the workplace, tuberculosis in the workplace, as well as more broad health and wellness initiatives which look at the environment within which public servants operate. We do know that the environment can be very harsh, particularly at a provincial level, district level. The facilities in some of the offices are not adequate. So we try and establish best practice templates about what the basic requirements are for service delivery in frontline offices, how these offices should be organized, and we work very closely with other departments on this, particularly the Department of Home Affairs. Then the OSDs obviously is an area which the honourable members would have an interest. The whole of South Africa is interested, given the focus on doctors at the moment. But just to indicate that we needed to develop a dispensation for professionals in the public service in order to recruit and retain the best of our skills in the country. We found that recruitment is relatively easy because the entry-level salaries of many of the professionals are actually higher in the public service than in the private sector. But as people get experience, then it begins to shift. Once you've got experience, the conditions of service for professionals are more attractive in the private sector. So the problem is more one of retention than recruitment. So we came up with the occupation-specific dispensations, which were unique salary structures for particular occupations in the public service. We've implemented for all categories of nurses, for legally qualified professionals, for educators and social workers. We have concluded negotiations and are awaiting full signature on the OSD for correctional services. And we are making good progress with the doctors, medical specialists, dentists, pharmacists, emergency rescue services and so on. But that is the topical one at the moment. But we are confident that in terms of the offer that we have placed in the bargaining council that we will see success over the next few days in this area. And that will mean that most of the occupation-specific dispensations have then been negotiated and implemented. The outstanding ones would be the engineers ones, and then there are certain medical and education therapeutic specialists, psychologists, speech therapists, physiotherapists. That is another outstanding OSD. In the area of IT management, we have made a lot of progress in terms of connectivity in the Kusong centers in particular. We've come up with a shared service model for the public sector, which has been incorporated in the new IT plan for government. We have also, in terms of the Bajupili learning networks that we've set up, we've continued to make progress in engagement with departments and local governments in particular, and disseminated good practice learning so that all our public servants across the spheres of government can learn from the successes and achievements of individual departments and so on. The Know Your Service Rights booklet I've mentioned, we translated it into all official languages. We distributed over 60,000 booklets to communities. We recruited during 2008-09 over 600 community development workers. We trained them in the learnership for CDWs, and we have about 3,000 CDWs deployed across the municipality. We trying to tighten up on the policy framework around the program, and as indicated, we do have a big program in the DRC, and basically we have been assisting the DRC to make a headcount of their public servants, to eliminate those workers, and to set up a central office for the management of what is known as the census of public servants. We've also made progress in a number of international organizations where the minister successfully hosted the 6th Pan-African Conference of Ministers of Public Service last year. We also participated in the establishment of a South African chapter of the African Association for Public Administration and Management. We've developed minimum anti-corruption guidelines for departments, which is very important that in order to deal with matters of professional ethics and anti-corruption, departments should have minimum standards. They should have an investigative capacity. They should have a capacity to manage the financial disclosures, etc. So we've developed a framework, and we've also tested compliance with that framework. We also, in recent years, convened a number of meetings in South Africa, international meetings, including an Africa Forum on Anti-Corruption and the Global Forum 5 on Fighting Corruption. And we've taken those resolutions and we've incorporated them into our national processes. We've also engaged in the African Peer Review Mechanism activities. South Africa has been reviewed. The report was presented to the Heads of State Forum. We have subsequently done a progress report which was tabled in January by the President to that forum. And we've held some provincial consultative conferences to look at topical issues, which include xenophobia, poverty alleviation, crime prevention, and these are ongoing. Perhaps before I move to the budget, the chairperson asked me to talk to the issue of challenges. I think I did start to mention during the presentation that the key challenge for us is we're a central department which makes policy for the public service, but the powers to implement that policy are vested in executive authorities, in ministers and directors general who get delegations from ministers. I think compliance with the framework is the key challenge. How do we get departments at national and provincial levels to comply with the framework? That certainly is a major challenge, and one which we hope to be working with the committee on in the future as we bring information, reports which will say these are the various policy areas where we monitored and evaluated implementation of policy. I mentioned, for example, minimum anti-corruption standards. Where are the problems in various departments? If you look at the management of human resources, one of the big perceptions out there is that we have a massive vacancy rate in the public service. Now, actually, that vacancy rate is inflated because when we look at personnel expenditure, every year, the personnel budgets are set in departments. But we are saying that there's a huge number of vacancies. That is really because departments do not manage their system. The payroll system is a payroll system which also contains a vast amount of human resource information, including the organizational structure. And departments are supposed to be maintaining the information on that system. Because they don't maintain the information properly, they will establish new posts without abolishing the posts that they don't want to use anymore. That begins to inflate the numbers which appear on the system and provides a false picture around the vacancy. Now, these are things that we need to impress upon departments, that they need to comply with the requirements of updating their information, of managing their information. Of course, there is still a problem of vacancy. There is a lot of movement within the public service because departments often don't want to use the standards that are set. So, for example, job evaluation. If departments evaluate state secretaries in different ways. And this has happened at national level. You will see many secretaries moving from one department to another where they are on higher job grades. So unless we have compliance with a framework which requires coordinated job evaluation processes so that we have a norm across the public service, you've got to get this movement. That's why in the health sector, for example, certain specialist nurses might be remunerated at a higher level, certainly before the implementation of the OSDs, and that will also lead to movement. So I think the main point I'm trying to emphasize is that we need to have a focus on compliance. And I think that's where Parliament can play a big role at all the levels, or the legislatures at all levels of the system can play a big role. I wouldn't say it's necessarily a challenge at this point, but certainly the implementation of the single public service is a massive program of government. There's been a long-term commitment. The ruling party originally came up with a resolution in Stellenbosch in 2002 on this matter. There is considerable work that has been done, and we would think that we would have accelerated implementation in the next couple of years. And obviously we would need to be working with the National Assembly and the NCOP on this matter, the committees, the relevant committees, in terms of piloting this legislation through the national parliamentary process. This will be a major area of work that we would need to be collaborating on over the next 18 months. So I thought it would be, Chairperson, very important to mention that we have a massive legislative program for this particular portfolio, focusing on the realization of the single public service concept in legislation. And we have major drafts which have been developed and major public consultative processes which we need to embark on in the coming months in order to achieve this. Moving then, Chairperson, Honourable Members, onto the budget. We have the summary here. We don't have a massive budget, but of course we do have a serious budget that we need to manage. We have the various elements of the budget, the program. We also highlighted the PPETA here. The PPETA still draws its budget from the DPSA, and hence we just wanted to show that here. Also the CPSI, the Center for Public Service Innovation, and these are the estimates of expenditure which we have. We have received a number of cuts because of the global economic meltdown, which forces us to reprioritize going forward. This is just a pie chart which illustrates the previous chart in terms of the proportional allocation of the different programs. The administration is the largest one, but then an indication of the other programs as well. In terms of economic classification then, the compensation budget shows a steady rise. Goods and services will rise and fall a bit. And then the total budget in this particular graph. And then the figures per economic classification, the breakdown, are illustrated here. One thing you will observe, Honourable Members, from this slide is that our budget in 2008-09 was almost the same size as the estimates for 2011-2012. This is really because we have been managing a certain program centrally. The policy on incapacity leave and ill health retirement is a very important program which has saved a lot of costs for government. Very difficult for heads of department to know how to deal with staff members who are suffering from ill health-related illnesses without having medical expertise to advise them. So we devised this program called PILLA, Policy on Incapacity Leave and Ill Health Retirement, which provides a facility of a health risk manager to assist heads of departments to determine the veracity of applications for incapacity leave. It saved a lot of money, but it was managed centrally up until this financial year we've just gone through, and the budgets have now been decentralized, and that's why you see the change in the budget. So it appears that we got more last year than this year. It's mainly because of PILLA, but there has been an overall cut as well. So I just wanted to mention that. In conclusion, Honourable Chairperson and members, we believe that we have aligned our strategy with the new mandates of the new government, with the medium-term strategic framework, and the President's State of the Nation address. We are also reviewing our strategy to look at any gaps that may be there. Obviously, these processes we are going through now are part of that, but also to reprioritize in terms of the scarce resources which we currently have available to us. So we will be holding an operational review session with the Minister in early July to look at the medium-term strategy again, as well as to review our operational plan for this current financial year. I thank you, Chairman.
Thank you very much, Chair. May we give him a round of applause? Thank you very much. We are now going to engage on this. And in terms of the Deputy Minister's speech, as and when you feel like equating it to the presentation, you can do that. It won't be subjected to page by page. It will just cut across. And then you'll keep on referring if you want to. But I'm going to be a bit strict so that we finish in time. I'm going to allow you to take page by page, and we don't come back, precisely because it was just meant for briefing and prepare us for the next week's way. I think we need to move that way. Sure. Is that? Yes.
No, except, Chair, that I would ask for the exception, partly because the slides were visual. I would raise issues as I noted.
Welcome.
Thanks.
We'll club comply to your request, but I'll focus on page by page in terms of whatever. Except yourself. I'll repeat, I said, in terms of the Deputy Minister's speech, you can raise it as and when it comes to your mind. Politically. Because it's a political meeting. Can we then start raising issues? And let's go straight to an issue and not a preamble. Deal with the issue and then we finish with pause. Is there any? Honorable Devo?
Yeah,
on page two.
I just want to say that under the establishment of the EPOK, the last document from the bottom, in terms of the policy making providing any support, I would assume that in such a process, we also put mechanisms in to have common interpretation of the policy across the department. But quite often than not, we find different interpretations of the policy. How do you address that kind of situation?
Thank you. That was very true. we are going to avoid question and answer method directly. We need questions so that they know them and then prepare. Yes, sorry, I didn't introduce each other. That was an error. As we speak, let's introduce each other. We're supposed to have been introduced each other to know who is in the meeting. It's my mistake. I apologize for that.
No, my name is Edin Chani.
Yes, yes.
My name is Gozana Mfuko from the committee section. I would have loved, for this committee to have an update on the single public service. We take note that there's been work that has been done in terms of the implementation of the remuneration policy. Also, in terms of your program called governance, there's a sub-program called planning, monitoring, and evaluation. The concern that is raised is how will that program synergize its work with the planning commission and the president, as well as the M&E unit. Equally, there's also a concept within your department called the public management watch. Could you kindly explain to this committee what does it mean, especially its role with regard to the provinces?
To any other question or comment or whatever?
Sure. My name is Matila. In terms of page 2 again, the same question in the 1.2. Maybe if we can have an indication as to when did this hands-on process start? Because I'm asking this in line with the challenges you have just mentioned.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My name is Willem Faber from the committee. And I would just like to know, I'm not exactly sure which page, but it's all about the performance management and the indicators on performance management. I would like to know on public office bearers, specifically competency, job evaluations, and compliance towards specific jobs. Because I believe that's got a big role to play in public service, to see that people are specific competent as well as the compliance towards their jobs. And how will it be evaluated, as it seems at this stage it's not being done properly? Thank you.
Thank you very much. Honorable Bloom.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. My name is Dennis Bloom. My question is on page 12. Can I go to page 12? Yeah. On the OSD for correctional services and medical officers. Can the minister, deputy minister, and the DG give us a direct information? What? Because I know on Wednesday they were sitting. Maybe we can get that information. So that we must not hear it in the street, but here in Parliament. On the challenges, the DG is saying that compliance to implement policy is a very serious challenge. Why? Why is it? Because there's laws in the country. Why are they not implementing a policy? And this massive vacancy rate, maybe you can give us a breakdown, even if it is not today yet, but give us a breakdown on the departments. I know for a fact in correctional services there's a big vacancy rate, but in other departments as well. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Any other comments, questions, or demand?
Yeah. Thanks, Chair. I hope I will remember all of those. I have quite a lot. One is to do with they are being responsible for overall framework of the policy term. The standardization and monitoring of the CDW work, I think it leaves a lot to be desired, particularly from the province I come from. And the evaluation in terms of the whether the money that we put into the program has really given us worth for the purpose we established the CDWs for, particularly in rural municipalities. For instance, take the Durban scenario, Durban Metro scenario, where the Durban municipality has established what they call community mobilizers, which do exactly the same thing as the CDW, if you look at what they're supposed to do. So maybe for now, Chair, it would be a question in terms of the how far is the standardization of work, the monitoring and evaluation of the quality service that the CDW, because he mentions that they do train them and they do take care of the enhancement of the ability and capacity to deliver. And I do also have concerns in terms of the management of them, of the work performance and that kind of thing, and even the resources that they use to be able to deliver the service that is required. The second one, Chair, is I come from the disability sector, Chair. I'm a key activist, and I've worked with the service, the department, in trying to draft whatever the police that has there. I've been in the lead in helping, but we're not moving. Not even when the commission itself, if you look at the report of the Public Service Commission, it would be worth for other times. I'm sure the research unit is taking note of that. That we're not moving, and the question therefore, Chair, for now, would be what strategy then, what practically are we doing? I know that the presenter was saying they will come back to us for monitoring and oversight plane, but I think there is a need either to do data development if we can't access disabled people. We don't have, even if it's research work, activity around this, where we are gathering some knowledge base around this sector of people, because it might be that they're doing everything to attract people, but it's misdirected, or there's a missing link. So I'm asking, it's either, Chair, we do have, if there's anything practical but that they do in relation to, related to that is a question around how are they influencing the department? What strategy or what activity is there to influence? Is it there are human resource managers or human resource units of different departments, I know, but how are they? Is this DPSA sitting with them in workshops, through workshops, or to influence them? What kind of activity is there, to influence this? This week, in relation to the area, I don't know where it is, the area around the remuneration, where they've got the question is also disabilities related, in terms of the reasonable accommodation concept. I know, for instance, you would find the police doing some work with regards to its disabled members and the kind. So what role is the TPSA playing in standardizing the kind of compensation or support to in the line of reasonable accommodation? The key question that ordinary people ask, I'm asking for them now, is the question on there's this thing that when they advertise jobs, even for a job that doesn't require a driver, I'm asking, it's just a general question, even in a job specification where you don't require driving skills, they require driving as a condition. Maybe I must ask it this way. How serious is that in terms of deterring people to apply for jobs? As such, I understand on those jobs that you really require a license. Let me stop here, Chair, so I don't take much of your time, but I have lots of other questions. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Nothing about us without us. And then you'll come.
Thanks, Chairperson. May you please allow me just to ask a question. As I was listening to the DG talking, I didn't mark the pages, but they are chronological. The DG made mention about the job evaluation, which sometimes make he made mention of, for example, the secretaries. You find that they move from one department to another because of remuneration. Because of this single public service, will you see that, all right, it's going to eliminate the problem? All right, that was my question. The issue of goods to workers, you made mention that you are assisting the DRCs. What is the situation now in South Africa, in the Republic of South Africa? Do we have the same problem of ghost workers? Number three, the last one, the issue of Vatupili principle. This Vatupili principle, is it a reality or a farce? Why I'm asking this question is because the whole country is still crying about service delivery. How do we implement this thing? Thanks.
Thank you. Let's now be very specific. At 11 o'clock, one committee must come in here and do its work. Okay?
Yeah, Matilda. Okay. I'm just saying in terms of the workers, particularly the issue around vacancies. I mean, my personal experience as a former member of the of SCOPA in the Gauteng province and also a member of the sports committee. Now, I would like in terms of your explanation around that particular area, because I know that both in SCOPA and also in the sports committee, there was. In that particular committee, we find out that a lot of problems that were raised by SCOPA, also by the portfolio committee on sports, around vacancies, you know.
Thank you very much.
And, a lot of, you know, in terms of that, and I think it is important for you to give us a sample, just as we know that the departments, that many departments, of the way you have raised that specific challenge to yourself, around problems within the department, because I know that departments do not move. Do not comply in making sure that vacancies are filled. Now, I'm saying the problem you have given to us, in certain instances, does not exist. The reality of the matter is departments do not fill in those particular vacancies. You know, that is the first problem. The second area is, if you look at the Department of Transport, particularly in that specific province, I'm not sure as to how are you going to. How are you dealing with the problem around OSD or also, you know, you have also created an impression through public works in that particular province around taking on interns who stay on in that particular department for 3 to 4 years or 2 years, whatever, or more than that, you know. At the same time, whilst we have those, then you create what you call specific companies in those specific departments for them to take over this particular stuff. And if you go into those specific province, you look at what those people have been paid, you know, because you see, they have completed the 1 year. You are taking them over for another 2 to 3 years. But then create a, either a parastatal or create a company that must remunerate them. Because are you not creating another problem for government? In also taking into consideration what has happened with the public sector now, at this first, because you're creating another obstacle at that particular level. I'm just checking as to the question that has been raised around the influence, how you coordinate things at that particular level. You know, because you gave us different examples, and the reality of the matter is if you go to departments, you have a different situation and scenario that is happening at that particular level. And that's another challenge that will be coming to government and the department itself. But how are you dealing with all those issues?
Thank you very much. Honorable Nelson.
Hey, I'll be very short, I'm considering your time. But even if I'm not answered my questions, because next week we're going to engage some hearing, the point that I want to raise is that I've got many, many things, but I wanted to raise this one. I'll raise three, I think. The first one is around this thing, the question of the CPW. Do we have the department monitoring mechanism? Is there a tool where these people, for instance, the job description, and they do their work in monitoring and in assisting the communities with the department, linking them together, and then there is any mechanism that we are able to trace that this is how far the CDWs are impacting in terms of linking government with the people? I think that's very, very clear. Not next week, I'll clarify it again. The other part is about the question of monitoring the department, the issue of Matupi. I'm interested, I think my question is linked to the question of the MNE, Monitoring and Evaluation Program. Are you able as a department to monitor various departments in terms of implementing these policies, for instance, Matupi? I won't make examples here, but talking about that, you can go around the country, get to this official, find them, the word Matupile, for instance, they can't even interpret what does that mean. They don't understand it. So is there a tool, that monitoring tool, where you are able to say, at least now we are convinced that 50% of our public service officials are able to understand, I mean, the norms and values around the principles. That's my address. The other one, perhaps another ones, I'll ask them next week. But I'm interested in the importance of aligning the strategy with the budget. Because I'm listening here, and I was listening to someone, another debate. And when you're talking about meltdown, economic meltdown, I'm always getting worried because the finger, as I'm listening, is always pointing to the poor. That the poor are going to be the most people which are going to suffer in this economic meltdown, as I'm listening. But I'm interested to know from the department, even if I'm given an answer next week where we can engage, is the department aligning its strategy to the budget, or are you aligning your budget to the strategy? These things, I think, that's enough for me now, Jefferson.
Thank you very much. The Honorable satisfied. Can I allow? All right. Before I allow the department, I just want to add to some remarks from our side here. I think we would request the department to give us a report, not today. We would need a report on single public service progress. And what are those things that the committee must be set to assist the department to finalize this matter? I think that must come very, very, very quickly. It's urgent, even in the state of the national address. And we also need the report. I think I'm not answering on behalf of the department, but the department must answer. So some of the remarks that I would want to make is a request on behalf of the committee of compliance in all departments. If you answer that one, we must get a written report to ask so that we're able to make follow-up. I think that is important. And also we need as a committee to get a list of your conferences and summits, precisely because we are an interested party, so that we are able to make that oversight engagement, both actively and proactively. It's important that all these conferences and whatever, we must have them so that we are in the future come to hold you accountable in terms of those, so that we don't do things just for the sake of compliance or for the spending purposes. We need to see the results in terms of that. Other thing is the public sector summit. I think we must be invited as a committee. Even though we might not, some of us might be engaged, I think we might even have a representation from the committee. It's important we need to be invited there. And also quarterly reports of your achievements. That are very important to the committee. I think many other things that are here, you would have to engage with our management, to further come out with details in terms of certain answers and whatever. But generally, I think we need the report. I haven't had any questions from our deputy minister, because this is a political committee which was supposed to be engaging, in essence, the deputy minister. The deputy minister today has not been asked. It's a parliamentary committee. And you would assist, because all those things that the DG has raised, of course, it's a program of the a political program of the deputy minister. As such, there's this thing which I think specifically the deputy minister must just unpack. The DG's power lies with the executive to do certain things. In particular, the implementation. The executive should provide an overall board procedure direction. But I think the DG needs an authority of some sort. Where is this authority? What mechanism do you have to ensure that indeed there is an authority given to the implementer of political decisions? It's very important. Maybe the minister would have to come out clear with that one. OSD, just say general, it's not coming from the perception is it's like the department has reneged. That's why we have a general strike, doctors, nurses, and whatever. Because 2007 general strike, public service strike, sort of introduced in a way OSD. And the perception to the workers is that their condition of service will be resolved. Some are supposed to have been implemented 2007 July, others 2008 July. Nothing has happened. Was the agreement a camouflage or what? Because we needed something that really speaks to the reality and commit the department to address those things, to deliver. Maybe this OSD was not well researched, whatever. Can we get an understanding that going forward, we're not going to express these things? And as such, in that context, we also need a report specific on OSD, because we don't want to come next year, budget year, another strike comes, and so on and so on. We need an overall report. As a committee on this one, and also assist the committee where you need legislative intervention. You need to assist that to say these are the things that the committee should assist on. If there is a constraint, so that we quickly allow our researchers to assist in dealing with those legislative interventions or gaps. Thank you. I think after they shall have responded, we note what you need to note for next week, and we release those things so that we allow the committee, the other committee that comes in, to begin to prepare its desk hands on. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Indeed, committee members have raised a number of issues which I think would be quite difficult for us to take on now. And perhaps our recommendation would be that we should really table this, accept this as an agenda for further meeting. And that should enable the department also to prepare. I mean, we could speak on all of them, but it would take us a long time. But our purpose to be better served is to prepare our staff and give you the right kind of information that you require for the meeting. But there are a couple of things that we could sort of deal with now just to address the issues that have been raised. Let me first take the matter of the executive authority in the past. As I understood it, I think the matter was raised in the context of the challenge we have to ensure that there is compliance by the department. And the executive authority as a structure that's vested with the presidential mandate to actually execute on behalf of the president. And at the end of the day, the compliance function really resides with the executive authority. Now, whether that functions that's delegatable to the DGs, I'm not sure. Maybe the DG might want to comment further so that I can better understand that particular issue. But certainly in the structure of government, it's the executive authorities that carry the ultimate political responsibility to ensure that execution is in fact happening and so on. Let me address the matter of the OSDs, because I think that's really quite a substantive one. I'm sure the DG will take you through the technical stuff, but particularly for the Honorable Bloom's information, yes, I think that you know that the general criticism from the labor movement has been that the employer has been a bit tardy in implementing the OSDs as it has been negotiated and agreed in 2007 consequent upon that strike. In 2007 there was a resolution which formulated an approach as to how the state must respond as an employer to the matter of OSDs. And in addition to the matter of OSDs, that resolution also dealt with how the employer and the labor movement must relate to each other on the question of the general increases in wages, in service remuneration. The critical thing to understand is that the resolution of 2007 was a multi-year resolution, and it bound both parties to a four-year period. And in the first of the 2 years, insofar as the remuneration were concerned, there was a commitment that the remuneration would function on the basis of CPIX plus 1%. That would have taken us up to 2008-2009. That is insofar as the general increases are concerned. The agreement specifies that from the current year going forward to 2011, the nature of the agreement will be resolved by a process of collective bargaining. So in the first 2 years, there was an understanding, CPIX plus 1%. In the third and fourth year, the agreement says that you must resort back to collective bargaining, because at that stage in 2007, it might not have been anticipated that the economy could go up or down. Now, I think by admissions on all sides, that despite the fact that we've had a policy on OSD, our implementation has been a bit tardy. And my understanding, and I've only learnt this recently, is that part of the problem relates to the fact that this was decentralized in the implementation, and in the way it was applied in various departments, there were some inconsistencies which resulted in some departments running out of their budgets, others not applying them properly, creating huge discrepancies, particularly in the sector of health and education. In education, it got conflated generally with the general increase. So OSD got interpreted as a general increase, and a 4% across the board is applied, when in effect, the OSD is a specific mechanism that government has evolved to address the problem of the retention of scarce skills in the public service, and should not have been confused
as part of a general increase in wages. So that was the first problem. The second problem has been in the health sector, where in the way it was applied, the resultant application of the OSD was that nurses got the better benefit and doctors got the short end of the stick. Now, I think the most significant advancement has been that both labor and employer have got together and have worked out a strategic frame within which the backlog could be addressed and the obstacles that exist in the implementation can be removed. There is an agreement by both sides that wherever there are outstanding matters, these matters will be addressed, and the targeted date to try and resolve all of these backlogs is the end of June. So what is happening currently is that there are negotiations between the two parties taking place in the different sectors. You must understand that the bargaining chamber is made up of a centralized bargaining chamber and then several sectoral bargaining chambers that deal with the specific conditionalities to each sector. For example, the health workers, pharmacists, doctors are in one chamber, the correctional services in another chamber, and so on and so forth, and education in another chamber. So what the agreement has been, that has been established now, is that the process of centralized resolution of these problems will in fact take some degree of centrality now. And whilst the sectors are trying to negotiate and come up to the agreements by the 30th, the centralized chambers will then endorse them, and once we've got these agreements on the outstanding matters, we will then as a government be prepared to then implement it from the 1st of July going forward on the OSTs. Two assurances have been given on the OSTs. There's been some understanding that insofar as the totality of the packages are concerned, government has got the fiscal resources to deal with the OSD problem. And that's where the process is right now. And on Wednesday, you know that in response to the health workers, government is able to table a proposal which the health workers are considering, and we are awaiting their response. And the indications are that consultations are happening towards some kind of settlement on it. We also heard the good news that as far as the correctional services are concerned, that agreement has been secured. They have been signed off as far as the OSDs are concerned, and that is in place. Now, I think the other matter that the members need to also be mindful of, and this is a matter that gets confused in the way the media reports on what's actually happening. I think sometimes in the way the media reports the matter, they conflate the two things. They conflate the OSD with the general increase. And it then appears as if we've got a whole lot of striking or potentially striking workers around a general increase complicated by the OSDs. It's important to understand that we will now enter into a period of negotiations on the general increase. And what we have on the table right now is a tabling by the labor movement to open up the negotiations on the general increase. And we have not entered into that phase just yet. There is a table from labor, a proposal from labor, which government is then addressing because it will have to respond, and then we will go into the season of negotiating around the general increase. Everything that you've heard so far, all the noise in the public media, has specifically and more to do with the application of the OSDs and how we can remove the obstacles so that both government and labor can find the settlement that is necessary. I must tell you that notwithstanding the noise that you might hear, we, all of us, are increasingly positive that there is some convergence between the way labor is looking at it and the way the employer is looking at it, in that we're all very committed and very dedicated to removing the backlog on OSTs, to getting the system right, to try and correct the imbalances that have been introduced because of errors in the past, and to work towards some kind of progressive structure so that we could bring this under control. I'll leave the rest to the DJ.
Thanks very much, Chairperson.
Before, I don't know whether I'll get the approval of the committee member to say the DG, if it's correct, to put all the answers in writing and then we submit them to the committee on Monday. I was taking time, really. Mm-hmm. All questions, book answers in writing, and with the permission of the week.
Agreed.
The whip, are you, is the whip comfortable? I was taking time and then it's Friday and then if we get all the, we'll be able to. And one other thing that the tax team also should brief our management and then we'll brief the committee on other things that are connected to the interventions that the department seeks to do. And on the 30th June, this department and Department of Cooperative Governance will be with us on the issue of budget. And then I think we'll take it further from there. May I say, we want to thank the respect we got from the Deputy Minister or the department in general. We commend you very much. We thank you very much for honoring this invitation. Let's see how we engage each other going forward, 30 June. There is much to do. There's much to do. And we also commend the progress that we have received in terms of our ministry. There are other things that are really moving forward, though there are challenges that we need to take. Deputy Minister, thank you very much. And pass our regards, Honorable Patayaki. We'll say comrade somewhere, but here are Honorable Patayaki. Thank you very much. Can this meeting stand again? Thank you. Mr. Mufugeni, I'm sure.